E.T. Phone Home.
I'm just having some brewski beers at my Mojo Dojo Casa house.
Wendy, I'm home.
There's no place like home.
Welcome to the House of Cinema Podcast. I am your host, Joe Aragon. With me today, Sydney Volpe. And in the house today, her web connects us all, Sydney. It is time for a discussion on Madam Web. How are you feeling going into this episode?
I am feeling really good going into this episode because I don't think we're here to completely bash Madam Web. I think we're here to get to the bottom of a cultural phenomenon that is happening right now. The internet is a really crazy place to be right now when it comes to this movie. And I'm kind of excited to break down the Sonyverse, break down what happened with this movie. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I like that you brought up that Madam Web is like this cultural phenomenon, because that's how I do view this movie. You know, you make a good point. What is the point of us to sit here and bash a movie that we know is bad, that you, the listeners, know is bad? You know, we're going to talk about what doesn't work and why maybe it failed. But I think the more interesting conversation is the future of the Sonyverse and kind of the future, not the future of movies. That may sound dramatic, but there's a lot to talk about in terms of Madam Web and its place in the kind of the film world right now.
Right.
Madam Web
is
causing a lot of interesting questions to be brought up, is what I'm trying to get at. So we will talk about that. We're going to get into the movie, obviously. Before we do, the usual disclaimers. One, this episode will contain spoilers. If you're looking for a non-spoiler version of Madam Web, this is not it. If you don't mind, well, press on. Disclaimer number two, that's it. There's only one disclaimer. I'm not sure why it's disclaimer
like,
number
what
two.
What is he about to say?
Let's talk the IMDb summary. Cassandra Webb is a New York metropolis paramedic who begins to demonstrate signs of clairvoyance. Forced to challenge revelations about her past, she needs to safeguard three young women from a deadly, adversary who wants them destroyed. Is he deadly? I'm not sure. We'll talk about Ezekiel Sims. Maybe later. Rotten Tomato score has a critic score of 13%, audience score of 55%. I cannot pull a consensus. I'm not sure if Rotten Tomatoes just doesn't have any.
They didn't even try.
Out of the Sonyverse spinoff movies, now I'm not including the Amazing Spider-Man movies, just the spinoffs, Madam Web has the lowest critic score at 13%, followed closely by Morbius at 15%, then Venom at 30%, Venom 2 at 57%. Does this shock you?
I think there are a couple shocks here. I guess at first I was surprised that Madam Web had as high of an audience score as it does at 55, but then Morbius has an audience score of 71, which is even more shocking. But maybe the biggest shock of them all is that both critics and audiences like Venom 2 the most, where I personally think the first Venom movie is better. And I think you agree, right?
I'm a big Venom 2 or Venom 1 fan. That's a little bit dramatic to say. I'm not really a big Venom fan. But out of the options that I have, I am leaning towards Venom as my favorite of the Sony spinoff movies. Then I would go Venom 2. Then I would actually go Madam Web, then Morbius. Morbius is bad, but I would watch Madam Web probably 200 more times over Morbius. How do you feel?
I agree with you, and I think that's what's so interesting about this is, like, what – I think it also ties to that question of, like, saying a movie is good versus saying it's your favorite. Like, I know people who genuinely liked this movie. Listeners, if you had fun with Madam Web, we don't blame you.
I don't blame you. I had so much fun with it.
Yeah, I came out of this movie thinking – that I think that is bad on principle. Like, it's a movie that clearly got botched up in the editing room. There was a big foundational issue where they changed, like, the year it was going to take place, and who knows the changes that necessitated for the script and the production design and all that. But I came out of it thinking it did not commit the cardinal sin of boring me.
No,
I was not bored. And in Morbius, though it may be a more cohesive film, I think just falls so flat in a way that I'm not interested in revisiting it at all. But Madam Web is kind of like that car crash you can't look away from, you know?
Retweet. I agree wholeheartedly with everything you just said. We'll talk more about, like, the the misgivings of Madame Web and Morbius and why people may be more forgiving to Morbius and not Madame Web. But I agree. I think Madame Web, and I've said this online a couple of times, and I've said it to you and Claire on podcasts, but I really think Madame Web is like the Room of this generation, a movie that, like, foundationally speaking, is bad, you know, editing and it's I don't want to say all of the performances, but most of the performances, the writing, there's a lot of things about the movie that don't work, but like, wow, I had so much fun watching it. I mean, I sat there in my theater seat laughing a lot with, you know, my friends, and what are movies if not a place to go laugh with your friends?
I think this is true, even if perhaps it wasn't in the way that the filmmaker and the creators intended. And I told you and Clara, I live in DC. I feel like New York and LA, people are much more clued into what's going on in the movie world.
Yeah.
My crowd in DC wasn't like laughing like that, but I was laughing. I was laughing at the movie and I was like, I hope I don't look like an asshole right now. I was keeping it down. I was doing some, you know, you blow out of your nose and chuckle type situation. But I think that you saying this will be something like The Room for this generation is an easy statement for people to misconstrue or misinterpret, because The Room and Madame Web are very different movies. But I do see exactly what you mean. Like, I can see this ending up, I think because it's a studio film, it'll be harder for this to happen. But I would go watch this at like a midnight showing with
100%
people
would.
If it was meant to be kind of like laughed at, but like out of love. Like, I feel like the people who are thinking it's funny, everyone is just totally endeared by it. Like, people are posting compilations of quotes that they think are hilarious, and it's like everyone's just having a good time with it. I feel like the only place I'm seeing vitriol towards it is from like misogynist YouTube clickbaiters, you know what I mean? Otherwise, people are like, we knew it was bad and we had fun with it.
Yeah, I think that's like the common theme going around for Madame Web right now. Talk to me about your expectations for the movie going into it and your out of theater reactions.
I think my expectations going in, I mean, you had seen it before me. You let me know what you thought. And I honestly always have that little glimmer of hope, like, you know, maybe I'll be that one person who is like, you know what, I didn't hate it that much. And I definitely didn't come out of it, you know, we're seeing a lot of like, that's the worst movie I've ever seen in my life, and I definitely didn't feel like that about it. But again, I think there was just a lot that happened, kind of like a Frankenstein's movie type thing, and I think I knew that was gonna happen.
Let me ask you this: did you find this more unenjoyable or Argyle more unenjoyable?
Okay, that's another great question. So Madame Web, I think, was bad kind of from a technical standpoint. It got botched. But Argyle, I found annoying. And that's like a different, I think it was like conceptually corrupt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's a different kind of bad. Like, I don't find Argyle bad in any sort of endearing way. But Madame Web, I think I literally had more fun with.
I do feel the exact same way, like kind of the Morbius plane where Argyle is bad, but I have no desire to watch it again. But like you said about Madame Web, if they were to show this movie midnight showing, I would go with my friends and happy for all of us to go and kind
go
of laugh at it and talk about it. Yeah,
get popcorn. Yeah.
You know, have you been to a showing of The Room at like a local theater?
No, I haven't seen The Room. I had a situation like that where I saw Face Off.
Okay.
In theaters. And it wasn't like, you know, I feel like people aren't laughing like at Face Off. They're kind of laughing with it. But it was that situation where it was like, you enter into the theater at that time knowing the kind of environment you're going to be in. Have you seen The Room like that?
I have. And it's so fun. Like, people are into it. They're throwing spoons at the screen.
Yeah.
It's a whole event. It's an event. And I truly think if Madame Web is treated that way, it will go down as like that kind of cult classic movie. Like, people will gladly go watch Madame Web like on its anniversary every year.
So do you think that we discussed also in the Patreon how they did a re-release for Morbius because the studio maybe misunderstood the reason why people were talking about it so much and no one went and saw it when it got put back in theaters? Do you think people would see Madame Web if they did a re-release like soon after?
No. I don't think it's that. It's
let
too
it, let
soon.
It age a little bit, it like, needs a, to like age. A fine wine.
Needs to simmer a little bit. Needs to cook. It needs to cook. It does. It needs that time to cook. And I think that if Sony were to like, oh, Madam Web's back in theater in April, it would be a grave mistake. And if any Sony execs are listening to this podcast right now, please don't do that for your own sake. Because they got destroyed when Morbin Time went to the theaters a second time.
But you know what I can also say about why I had enjoyment watching Madam Web? I think that Dakota Johnson is genuinely charming in this movie.
Do you really? Let me ask you this.
Do you not?
No, not at all. Charming?
Yes.
No, I don't think she's charming.
So this is my problem that I've run into, is that I came out of that movie and I see her press tour and I was thinking like, man, she's so wry and clearly doesn't want to be there. And I think it's so funny. Like, I feel like me and Dakota Johnson would be great friends. And then I go on Twitter and people are like, she's so nasty. I hate her. Like,
I mean, I think nasty is a little bit of a dramatic word, but I don't think I find her very charming in the movie. I think I get the vibe that her, out of all the characters, doesn't want to be there. Like, she's there getting the job done for the paycheck and, hey, get your bag, happy for you. But I don't get the vibe that she's actually enjoying being there. Which kind of leads me to a question I had for you later, but I'll just ask you now.
Okay.
There's rumors over on Twitter that these actresses, it feels like they were under the impression they were joining the MCU. And it wasn't until maybe mid-production they realized this is not the MCU. Do you get that vibe?
I do get that vibe. Like, there's almost this air of contempt. Like, they didn't know that. They thought they were going to be doing this prestigious Marvel thing, or that they thought they were going to do like a crossover film and not just a straight up Sony Marvel film. But yeah, when I heard that, I mean, that coincides with another rumor that came out that as soon as the trailer dropped, Dakota Johnson fired her agent.
And like, no, I did not hear that rumor.
I saw that she went to a new agency. But I'm like, I mean, I'm not an actress. I don't know how the industry works, but I'm like, don't you read the scripts? Like, don't you do your own research into a project? Or do your agents just kind of tell you what's going on? Because I feel like it's not that hard to know. Like,
yeah, it shouldn't be that hard to know. Like, what's the MCU? What's not the MCU? But
yeah, I mean, this and Morbius, testaments to how a movie can literally be memed into cultural significance.
This is happening real time with Madam Web.
In front of our eyes.
Let's talk about Madam Web, the actual movie.
Okay.
The first thing I wrote down was ADR, 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 ADR. What is going on with ADR? Now, for anybody listening who doesn't know what ADR is, it stands for Automated Dialogue Replacement. And it's the process of re-recording actors' dialogue after the movie has been filmed, so in post-production.
Right.
Why is there so much ADR in this movie? What is going on? This is probably the moment or the aspect of the movie I noticed the most. I was shocked. And at a certain point, I started laughing because it was so prevalent. But I would argue all of Ezekiel Sims, the villain's character, the villain, all of his dialogue is like, it feels like it's ADR. What is going on?
Okay, I'm going to fight for the movie a little bit in this regard. Well, not fight for it, but I did hear a lot of complaints about the ADR going in. And I typically feel like I'm pretty attuned to ADR. Like, I notice it in modern movies a lot. Like, a lot of big blockbusters like this will usually have like one or two, not big blockbusters, but like Marvel movies or things like that, will usually have like one or two pretty noticeable ones. I didn't think it was that bad.
Really?
Dare I say, but you know what? There's one in the first 5 minutes that's some of the worst ADR I've ever seen in my life.
Which one is it?
The one where her mom, it's the flashback to her mom, and they're having a totally normal conversation. In the audio sounds a certain way, and then she turns away and she does like a pregnancy moan, and it's like not only totally different sounding audio, but it might as well have been a totally different person. It was wow. I was shocked.
The one ADR that really sticks out to me is the one where she's like, I just want to go home and watch Idol. That was a big one.
Yeah.
But the Ezekiel Sims character, I think and now I've only seen the movie one time, but I would say most of his dialogue is like, it's filmed in a way where you don't see his face. Like, it's like his like torso. He's like walking by. And then you hear him say like, I need to capture these three girls before yeah. they kill me.
It definitely seems like they were trying to cover it up by like choosing certain shots.
Oh, they really, really were. And I was shocked by how much ADR there was in the movie. It's actually gotten to the point where I think that ADR as like a process is now being more noticeable and well-known to general public. Like, I had people who don't right. watch movies say to me, like, why does it feel like they weren't saying their actual lines? It's like, oh, that's it's called ADR. There was a lot of people who were never aware of ADR. And now because of Madame Web, they're very, very aware of ADR.
Yeah, I saw. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people talking about it, videos about it going absolutely viral. And I mean, it's a symptom of leaning on reshoots. I think that reshoots should kind of be like a last resort a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But they're kind of commonplace now with films like this. And yeah, it makes you have to do ADR. But it's like, is it really that hard to not have it be so glaring?
Yeah. Well, this is a good segue into another point I wrote down, is that I believe I saw a video that SJ Clarkson had mentioned. There's over like 2,000 edits in this movie.
Yeah, I saw that.
And this plus the ADR, I think it's really important to know that like this is probably the result of a lot of studio interference, of a studio mm-hmm. trying to shape a movie in a certain way, which is causing an absurd amount of edits and causing a lot of reshoots and ADR to be used. And I think this is what's important about this conversation we're having today. We're not saying Madame Web is good, but there is really no point in continuing to bash a movie that's bad. And I think it is really important to talk about how these movies come to be. Like, how did Madame Web even turn out this bad? I don't think it's at the fault of someone like S.J. Clarkson. I don't know if it's even the fault of someone like Dakota Johnson or the cast. I really think a movie like this, all of the blame should be on Sony's shoulders.
I think I agree with you, and I think that that comes out a lot. I mean, I said before that they changed the year that this film was going to take place. I think it was supposed to take place in like the early 2000s, but instead it took place in the 90s.
All the way around. The movie does not take place. So the rumor was that the movie took place in like 1993, and then they changed it last minute to be happening in 2003.
Oh, that's right, 2003. Because of Spider-Man?
Because of Spider-Man? I don't know.
Because she's working with
Ben Parker.
I can't believe they're like, oh, you don't want to get shot? You've never been shot at in Queens, Ben Parker?
Well, I do want to point out that S.J. Clarkson has come out to say that's false. The movie was always set in 2003.
Oh, now, really?
Whether or not that's accurate or not, we'll never know. Only S.J. Clarkson and the writers will know. The reason why I think that's false, and I think it was intentionally supposed to be 93 or intended to be 93 and not 2003, the needle drops in this movie, they're all 90s songs, except for Toxic by Britney Spears.
Yeah.
Every needle drop in this movie is a hit song from the 90s. And it would make no sense why they would use those songs in 2003. Even the last song they play as the screen goes to black and it goes to the credits uh-huh. is Dreams by the Cranberries.
Which is not.
Yep. Not a 2000 song. I get the vibe. This movie was for sure meant to be in the 90s. And then reshoots caused it to be in 2003.
Yeah.
That's how true. I feel.
And so it's like that changes, and then, you know, they're trying to shoot the whole thing with like Mary Parker. Like, that's not S.J. Clarkson's, you know, artistic vision. You know, that's stuff that needed to be put into the movie that they're cutting around, that they're editing around, that they're reshooting around. And I was stunned at that interview where they were talking about how many edits there were. Because first of all, I don't even know how it came up in the conversation, but they were talking about it like it was like interesting. It's like one of the most edited movies of all time, but not in a, you know, Mad Max is up there too, but Mad mm-hmm. Max, it is actually like an artistic decision to shoot it and edit it like that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With Madame Web, it is not. And I was just like, wow, why would you feed that conversation in an interview?
It is an interesting decision, and it kind of makes me feel like, again, it's like, the studio wants this movie a certain way. How do we get it a certain way? Well, we have mm-hmm. to cut it up to make it look like that. There are some scenes in this movie that are so jarring from the editing. Like, it is
so jarring.
You get whiplash from like watching certain scenes. I know the one that's trending right now is the scene where she's trying to save the person in the car that's going to fall off the bridge. And the way it's edited is, it's wild. It doesn't feel like human beings are trying to make this movie. And that's kind of why I feel like, I don't know where the blame is to place on like the writing, because there are portions of this movie that feel like, are we human? What are we doing here? Because, for example, there's a scene in the movie where they go to the baby shower. And Emma Roberts, who plays Mary Parker, who is Peter's biological mom.
I didn't even know she was in this.
Neither did I. She's barely in it. Let's not even say she's in it a lot, but she's in it, but not much. But they go to a baby shower. And Dakota Johnson goes, you know, not willingly. She's there, though, to kind of show face for Ben, her best friend. And they're like, let's play a game. You play games at baby showers. It's a normal thing to do. You know, you guess the circumference of the belly. You know, you do dumb shit like that. Not in Madam Web. The game they play is guess the name of my baby. Which, as someone who's been to like 3 or 4 baby showers, that is not a game you play.
Hints either.
Well, that's the thing about it. It's like there's no hints. There's nothing. There's no signs to say like, what could the name be? And so they're like, okay, let's go around the room and see if everybody can guess. And someone's like, oh, is it Paul? And it's just like random shit like that. And it's moments like that in the movie where I think to myself, who did this? Who approved this? And who is writing this? Because no normal human being who's ever been to a baby shower would ever write this. And I'm so confused by those decisions.
Well, and I think that is a good point, because you see a lot of people saying, oh, the movie was bad because it has the same writers as Morbius. Like, I think there were 3 or 4 writers on the film. 2 of them wrote for Morbius as well. But yeah, it's like no human being would write a movie like this. So it is not all the writer's fault. There is much more at play here. So yeah, there are many scenes that are just cut to shit. The editing, and like you said, some scenes are just totally disorienting.
Yeah.
It's not just about having many edits. It's about like the shots that they're picking, like the angles that we're looking at situations from. You have no spatial awareness at all. I think the end, the climax of this film is the maybe the worst.
Say it.
Maybe the worst 20 minutes of film I've ever seen in my life.
In terms of the way, like, it's shot, the way it's edited, what's happening, what's unfolding, everything?
Everything. All of the above. It is like the CGI, the way it's executed, everything is just so goofy.
Well, I'm glad you're bringing this up, because the question I wrote down for you, no action, no problem? Was that a smart decision to make a movie about Madam Web where, well, one, none of the Spider Girls are in the movie. What we see of the Spider Women is the future. So it's like all a vision. So we're dealing with 4 characters who really have no powers.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on making a movie with no action? A superhero movie, nonetheless.
I think they kind of shot themselves in the foot having so much of it in the promo. And then people go and they're like, what the heck? We're only seeing them in their suits in this projection of the future and in these like dreams that this guy is having. But it's like, I don't mind having a movie not have a ton of action or not have her powers the whole time, but it seems like it's just not abiding by any sort of like 3-act structure or anything. But you know, you get to a certain point where you're like, okay, cool, I feel like I'm getting to know her, like she's discovering her powers. And then the movie just kind of keeps going and going and going. And then she discovers her powers and the movie is over like 10 minutes later. It just kind of makes no sense.
Can you walk me through the finale of the movie?
So Pepsi kills the villain. Yeah, by the way, really blatant Pepsi.
A lot of Pepsi
product placement, which, okay. But it is so central to the climax that it's like so funny. So the climax is that like she now has her powers. She can basically see the future, which allows her to kind of like strategize super quickly. So it's like she didn't get the spider powers where she can like climb on walls and like jump super high, but she can anticipate and she can see the future and she can change the future. Mm-hmm. So they lead the evil guy, Ezekiel, to this like warehouse and they like set off fireworks everywhere. And then they end up on the roof and there's like this big giant neon Pepsi sign that she's been like seeing in her visions. And it's just this like complete clusterfuck of CGI and fireworks and helicopters blowing up and she gets her powers, but it's so glossed over. Like all of a sudden she's blind.
And oh my God, I forgot that part. Yeah.
Someone was talking about the fact that in in her visions, the letter S in Pepsi kept coming up. And I was like, whoa, what's the significance about the letter S? And then finally, when we see it play out, of course, the villain is crushed by the letter P. It's just like none of – I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have a stroke. Like, what am I watching right now? It was almost impressive.
My favorite part about that finale is that – what she uses her powers to like save them, she has to like create three forms of herself.
Yes.
And those three ghostly projections like walk over to Sweeney and the other two characters and like help them up like a ledge. And it's like, don't worry, I got you. Like that's like the actual line. Okay. You're going to be okay. I got you. And the whole time Ezekiel Sims just watching it unfold, like not punching her. He waits for her to save the three girls and then punches Madam Web. I also find it really funny that like the extent of her power is like she sees a future and it's like Sydney Sweeney getting crushed by this like metal rebar and it's like, oh, duck! And then she has to duck to avoid. And like that's the extent of the action, is her yelling commands to these girls
to avoid
danger. I really don't know much about the Madam Web character, so I was unaware she was blind, and I was really unaware then she was paralyzed at the end, because...
Dude, what is up with movies we talk about in wheelchair reveals?
That was a plot twist that I was not expecting. The way, like, I got she was blind by the glasses she was wearing and the way she was acting, but then the zoom out to, like, her in her wheelchair, I was like, what the hell? I didn't know... That was a plot twist I was not expecting.
I was not expecting that either. And I mean, yeah, the way she goes blind happens in like a second and they don't really
go into it
further.
No, not really. I want to ask you, her web connects them all. What is the future? What are we doing here next? What's the plan with Madam Web?
The most exciting thing about the future is that it hasn't happened yet.
Wow. Well said. With great responsibility, power will come. That is an actual line from the movie, by the way.
That was an actual line when she travels to the Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't see them having a future with the Madam Web verse.
Do you think this is over? You think it's done after this?
I mean, I think they've said like, oh yeah, we could do like a sequel, but man, this movie made no money. I mean, money talks.
Money talks,
you're
right.
Money runs the ship over here in Hollywood.
I'm really confused by like what the kind of end game is with Sony overall. You know, we have Venom 3 coming out later this year and Kraven coming out this year. There has been no Spider-Men in any of the Sony spinoff movies besides... Right. A post-credit scene in Venom 2. I really don't know what the end game is, and I'm curious to know what you... I mean, you don't know, but what do you want?
I don't... My ideal scenario is that Sony just keeps it up. Like, I love the Sonyverse. I love watching these movies, especially when they're not good. And I think they should just keep doing one-off movies. We can pretend we're, like, back in the 2000s. Like, I don't understand with you, like, what was the original intent of even starting this universe? Where, I don't think there's any continuity. I don't think there's any canon. I don't think any of these movies connect to each other. It's too late to even try.
But even if we don't know if they connect to each other, do you want them to connect to each other? Do you want
Madam
Web to eventually, like, have her web connect this universe to Tom Holland or to Andrew Garfield or to No?
I think that was what the connection was, right, in the Venom post-credit scene, that it was like Tom Holland was in a different universe, and that was how Venom was going to get to the MCU, is that some of the little, like, gobbledygook was going to get into that universe.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's a cool little Easter egg. I don't want them crossing paths.
What do you think people want?
Too much to look after. I don't think people want... I mean, I don't think your average person even knows what the Sonyverse is.
You think so?
Yes.
Wow. You're not giving them any credit. I feel like...
Clearly the actresses don't know.
Yeah, you make a good point. I do wonder how many, like, just of the normal population, people going to see Madame Web are going aware that this universe is different than Tom Holland's universe.
Yeah. Well, because I think, I mean, they're referencing Peter Parker. Maybe they just think, oh, it must be like some allusion to like the MCU movies or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I definitely don't think we need another Spider-Man.
Okay. You went to see it, you saw it on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I did.
Theater capacity? What was that like?
Almost sold out, if you can believe it.
But
it's funny because there was another rumor, I guess, but apparently it came from like a big suit at a theater that they could literally see ticket sales. They could literally see people returning their tickets.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, that's crazy. Because,
I mean, that's why, you know, if you ever wondered why they wait for certain movies to lift the embargo until the day it comes out, that's why. Because if they know the movie's not very good, they don't want people to return their tickets.
Yep. I did read that tweet that people were.
I cringed a little bit. I'm like, I don't need to know that.
That's rough.
I don't need to know that. Woof.
Madame Web grossed $25.8 million in its 6-day box office run. The run's not over, but I mean the holiday run. This is lower than Morbius, which grossed $39 million in its weekend run. And it is the worst box office in the Sony Spider-Man universe ever.
Wow.
For the opening.
That, even compared to like that Bob Marley movie that came out, is doing decently.
Yeah, it's a decent movie. People like it.
Yeah, not a good performance.
For further context, here you go. Domestic opening weekend, Madame Web, just the weekend only, made $17.6 million. The next lowest is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, $35.3 million. Now, remember,
really?
That was the first movie in that series, in that franchise. It's animated. And for further context, Across the Spider-Verse made $120.6 million in its opening weekend. So
Okay.
That it wasn't a there case of like, this movie's bad. It's this movie's new, and people were kind of unsure of it when it came out. Mm-hmm. Morbius made $39 million in its opening weekend, as I mentioned. And then the next lowest is The Amazing Spider-Man at $62 million. Everything else made about 80 or more, including both Venom movies, Amazing Spider-Man 2. Yeah, it is. Madame Web is in a realm of its own, which makes me want to ask you, what are the predictions for Kraven?
I think it will be, I guess it depends on how good the movie is, but I don't have very high hopes. I think it'll be better than Madame Web. And I think maybe people like Aaron Taylor Johnson is more of a box office draw than Dakota Johnson. Oh, they have the same last name. That's funny. So I can see it maybe being a little bit higher. I don't see it getting to like an 80 figure though. What do you think?
Opening weekend?
Yeah.
Well, there's some things we need to consider about Kraven here. One, it is the only movie out of every Sony Spider-Verse movie that's going to be rated R.
Oh, true.
So is that going to help the movie or make it more difficult for it to make money? Mm. What do you think?
It's hard to know. I think it will. Honestly, I think it'll help it.
You think it's going to help it?
Yeah, I do. Were both Venom movies rated R?
They were not. Both PG-13.
Neither of them? Yeah, I think it'll help it. I think people are so hungry for rated R superhero movies.
Yeah.
That they'll show up.
Okay, I don't know if I agree.
Oh.
Here's the reason, is that if Kraven is bad, it won't matter.
This is true, too.
I think it'll make more money than Madame Web. But the thing is, if Kraven continues this trend of terrible Sonyverse movies, will it even matter if it's rated R? Like, I don't know. Because at that point, like, will kids sneak into it and buy tickets to it? I don't know. I really, really don't know. I just don't think that the movie has to be at least decent for this movie to do well. I don't think the radar is going to change that. Now, on the flip side of that coin, will the rated R or the R rating allow the movie to be better?
I thought the trailer still seemed pretty corny, if I'm being honest.
Really?
Yeah, but then also, like, Russell Crowe, there's so much more star power.
Oh, yeah,
power.
He's in it. I forgot about that.
Yeah, Russell Crowe and Aaron Taylor-John, Ariana DeBose.
It's true. True. I mean, I think the rated R will give the movie a bigger appeal. I think allowing the movie to be a little bit more zany with the kills and a little over the top will make the movie more appealing. But like I said, if those critics come back and they're like, this is ass, this is Madame Web again, I can see people not caring. And like I said, it's a harder ticket to buy in general.
Exactly. But I think that Craven, yeah, especially if Craven is coming out later on in the year, because I was going to say that Madame Web also kind of got screwed. The time of the year it is, like, well, not to say the time of the year it is, but we have this conversation a lot. Like, going to the movies is expensive. I think if people were going to see a Valentine's Day movie, by the time it came around, maybe they'd opt for Lisa Frankenstein.
It appears they opted for Bob Marley.
Or Bob Marley, yeah. Or even like The Taste of Things is getting really good word of mouth right now. Mm-hmm. But also, they've been showing Dune Part 1 in theaters again.
People That's are pricey. Pumped for Dune.
People are pumped. A ton of people are going to those re-release screenings. And then it's bookended by Dune Part 1 and Dune Part 2.
True.
So, you know, if people want to save their money, they're going to be going and seeing Dune Part 2. And then by the time Dune Part 2 releases, everyone will completely forget Madame Web even existed. So it definitely can't have legs, which sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Craven, I mean, what do you think? I think that Craven has the chance to be good if it doesn't get botched up like Madame Web did. Like, do you think that Madame Web could have been a good movie if it got made as the script intended? Originally.
That is the question of the hour, isn't it?
It is.
It's hard for me to say because, like, it's hard to pinpoint where this movie was not botched. The whole thing feels so cut up that it's hard to detect what part was where's the original vision here? That it's hard for me to find that. And so, like, it's hard for me to say, would this movie have been good if that vision was intact, because I don't know what the vision was originally. Like, what was the original vision here?
It's unrecognizable.
It is unrecognizable. Like, I don't know what they were going for here. I think that, like, this movie gets better without someone like Ezekiel Sims as a villain. I don't know if the Spider Women are completely necessary. Like, maybe if we spend more time with Madame Web and, like, watching her grow and use her powers more. Like, the thing about Madame Web is that her powers seem interesting.
I don't think
like her powers are lame to make a movie. They seem interesting and they could, you know, pull off like an Edge of Tomorrow type of a movie,
right?
But like, it doesn't know, I don't know if that vision ever existed. Like, that's the problem. I just don't know where that vision ever was.
Yeah, that's what's so weird is that it seems like it's kind of banking on having a second movie to explore her powers, because we don't actually get to see her in full force. You just get this kind of like clip of it at the end, like, oh, this is what they're going to become. Do we even see how the girls get their powers?
No. And as somebody who's never read the comic books, who knows nothing about those three characters, I would have loved to know how they become Spider Women.
That's the thing, is that it's just like, what is good? When you really think about it, it's like, where's the through line here? Because the whole – so also, yeah, do you think this is one of the worst comic book villains ever?
I think so. You know, like, I hate speaking in hyperbole, but just quickly shuffling through the villains we've gotten over the last 20 years, I'm not sure if there's a villain as bland, as boring, as unintentionally hilarious as Ezekiel Sims.
Well, just – I mean, the motivations are so
vague. I like the motivations. It's very like Terminator-esque, you know, I must kill these girls to prevent my death. I think the motivation is actually probably the best part about him. He has actual motivation. I need to find these girls and kill them. Now, the way they execute that is laughably bad. He's like this secret rich guy who like buys like internet tech that could identify faces in New York. Like what is going on?
Yeah. So I guess just like his side of things is not fleshed out well at all. But yes, conceptually, it is cool. Like he's seeing this vision and he's hunting them down. But then it is like you never get to actually see them have powers. And he's just – every time he shows up, it's just like nothing. Like he doesn't have cool dialogue. All his dialogue is ADR. So I just – my favorite line from him was when he was talking to his assistant and she's supposed to like look up these people that he's seeing in his dreams, these three girls. And she's like, oh, but they're just teenagers. How could it possibly be them? And he goes, they're teenagers now, but in the future they have powers. Like, those are not the opposite of each other.
Let me ask you, do you have a favorite line from this movie that you could remember that made you unintentionally laugh really, really hard?
I think that was one of my favorites. What else do they say? I know Dakota Johnson has some good ones.
She has some good zingers.
Do you have any off the top of your head?
I got three.
Okay, let's hear
There's one where they're in the woods. Dakota Johnson's there with the three girls. And one of the girls says, like, oh, I think it's Sydney Sweeney's character who says, you're the paramedic who saved my like stepmom's life. And then you are really awkward about it. And Dakota Johnson goes, yeah, that sounds... And then it cuts like a zoom in on her face, like me.
Oh, yeah. Dude, why was the shot like The Office?
I have no idea, but I did love that line. There's a couple other Dakota Johnson ones. She says when she does her whole vision going to the past to visit her mom in the Amazon.
Oh, right.
Chock full of just... amazing one-liners.
You're resurfacing so many great moments.
There's one line she goes like, she's watching her mom do something. She's like, why do you hate me? And then there's another line where she's listening to her mom talk and her mom's like, I'm trying to find a cure to this so my baby doesn't have a muscular problem. And then Dakota Johnson goes, but I don't have a muscular problem.
Funny because her voice is like echoing and she's like in this black void and she's so confused, but I don't have a muscular problem.
It's like, no, you
I
don't
love that one.
Oh gosh, the Ben Parker shooting in Queens one is a classic already.
Yes.
There's one where she almost hits a girl on the skateboard. She's like, geez, kids these days.
Oh yeah, she's like, who flips off an ambulance?
Oh yeah, who flips off an ambulance?
And then there's one where she's in the hotel room with all the girls and just all of a sudden Sydney Sweeney's like, my mom's in a psych ward. And it's not the concept of it, it's the delivery. Like everything's just like has no time or place.
Yeah, I think half the battle here is the delivery. Like it is some ridiculous lines, but the delivery from either Sydney Sweeney or Dakota Johnson are just sending it over the top. By the way, Sweeney at this point has had some interesting choices in her movie roles lately.
I thought that she maybe was a good actress, but within the last year or so, I'm not so sure. This was a rough one.
I am starting to agree with you, if I'm being honest. You know, I don't watch Euphoria, but of the scenes I've seen and from what I've heard, she's a good actress.
Right.
I liked her in that movie Reality, the HBO movie.
I thought she was really good in that. The Voyeurs. I liked her in The Voyeurs.
Okay. I did not watch that.
Especially here. So I'm guessing that her character in the comics, canonically, is a very kind of like shy, dorky girl. And it seems like Sydney Sweeney's really trying to channel that. But
she's doing her best.
It's all, I mean, she's totally miscast if that was what they were going for. And then it's like, why would you have her go for that if she's just not fit for it at all? No one's going to know. I mean, sure, maybe comic book. I don't think there are that many Madam Web comic book loyalists who would get mad if you changed that character's personality up a little bit. And so I was just like, this is just all wrong. I can tell it is Sydney Sweeney trying to play
a nerd, like a nerd, the shy,
and
quiet
it's just
girl.
Not working.
It is not working at all. I was shocked that's the character they were trying to go for, because it just was not working from the moment we met her. I don't know. You know, she has a promising career. You and I have not talked about anyone but you, but I think you and I both agree that Sydney Sweeney is kind of the weak link in that movie.
I agree. I know. And that was the movie that really solidified for me, like, Glenn Powell has the talent to kind of just carry something like that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That might not have, you know, the sharpest dialogue, but he adds that charisma to it. And yeah, Sydney Sweeney, I was surprised too, because I really thought that she maybe had that it factor. I think that she's a good pick for Barbarella. I'm actually kind of intrigued by that. I'm not out yet, but
I'm not out yet. I'm excited for Immaculate.
Yes, we're going to see Immaculate at South by Southwest. I am very excited for that.
So I'm not out on Sydney Sweeney yet. I am skeptical. Let's just say that.
I liked Celeste O'Connor.
Okay.
I thought she was maybe the best out of the three.
Sure.
From what we saw. And I thought they ended up being cute all together as a group. I like how she had, you know, Matt, she's older and she maybe doesn't seem very maternal. And then she has these three ragtag, they're all orphans or whatever. And she kind of has to, like, protect them. I liked that dynamic.
Do you think that works, though? Because I felt like that chemistry between, I thought that the chemistry between the three girls, I liked. I thought that was working.
Right.
But when Dakota Johnson's thrown into the mix, I don't know if it's working. And it doesn't help that lately it's been surfacing that, like, they have a group chat, but they don't include Dakota Johnson because she doesn't want to be a part of it. And, like, there's been a lot of, like, resurfacing or, like, surfacing interviews that talk about how, like, it was very awkward on set between all of them.
Oh, she is so me, I fear.
I don't know.
But you are kind of talking me out of the Dakota Johnson thing, is that I did like that she kind of was being aloof maybe at the beginning. I thought it was funny. But it doesn't work when she does have to take on that more maternal, like, leadership role for them.
And that seems like the role Madame Web plays. Now, again, I don't read the comic book, but she's Madame Web. She seems to be like this
Madame
Web, you know? She seems to be this character who's supposed to guide these three characters. And it just seems like she resents these three girls. Like, she doesn't seem like she actually cares for their safety.
This is true. And I guess, yeah, it seems like maybe it's the real world situation coming to life in the film. And then we get this flash forward when she ends up in the wheelchair and she's blind and she's trying to do this whole, like, Professor X thing where she's like this old wise person in the wheelchair. And she's like, I can see better than I ever have. And I just didn't buy it at all.
Neither did I.
I'll give you that.
Before we end our episode on Madame Web, do you have a favorite unintentionally funny or favorite scene in this movie?
A favorite unintentionally funny scene? It has to be the end. I mean, the end is just so ridiculous that I almost, like, it was like I had to watch through my fingers. I was like, what is going on?
Oh, okay. All right.
Do you? What's yours?
I thought the scene where she randomly decides to go to Peru to find the jungle in which her mom was studying at, and then runs into the arachnid people. What were their names?
Oh gosh, I don't know. Just the spider people.
Did you see the tweet that someone said that Peter Parker is appropriating Peruvian culture, apparently, with his his costume?
Oh my god! Wait, that's got low-key got his ass.
What were they called? An indigenous tribe?
It's not like the arachnids, the arachnoids?
It's like the arachnoids or something like that.
We've been talking about too many spider movies lately.
This is my third
spider-related
media discussion.
And we got the Sting trailer. We got the Silk announcement.
It's a lot of stuff.
You know what? But on the flip side, I will say something that I liked about this movie. I actually thought it looked pretty good most of the time.
You think it's well shot?
I think it's well shot. I think the cinematographer kind of cooked.
Okay.
Like, there were some shots of the city and some shots, I don't know, just kind of most of the time. Because I think when they were supposed to be in Peru and stuff, they shot on location somewhere.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it looked all that bad. So, I mean, you know, it's just those things where, like, I see I see little gems, little hints of the movie that might have been. And it's a bummer.
Wonder if we'll ever get like a complete oral history of Madame Web.
Release the Clarkson cut.
Yes, S.J. Clarkson cut. What do you think of the scene where she tries to climb the walls for the first time?
See, those, I know, but you keep bringing these up, and I'm like, maybe she's not that charming. No, but I thought it was funny. It was like a little allusion to maybe the Tobey Maguire moment.
I think it was. I think it was a clear homage to that that moment in the movie.
Yeah, I love that moment.
Didn't mind that too much. She talks to her cat a lot for some good expository moments. I love how loud the exposition is like talking to the cat.
I liked the pigeon moment.
What pigeon moment?
You know where she can see the future and she sees it and then she sees the pigeon slam into the window?
Oh, that's right. Why does that pigeon even go into the home?
It's a guy, I know, he was really barreling in there. Like,
he's just like, he had a mission and then he just walked, he just flew out. What was that pigeon doing?
Gosh, there's a lot of nonsensical stuff. Yeah. This movie, like when she literally like dies and comes back to life and she's weird.
Is that what activates her power?
Oh, that's a good question. What does activate? Yeah, it was. It was when she, I think she had to die in order to have her powers be activated.
I'm not really sure why. But
I think she sounds like a cool hero.
I think she sounds cool too.
She's blinded. And anyone who's read Dune Messiah, it's so similar to something that happens in Dune Messiah that I was like laughing in the theater.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, final thoughts on Madame Web and your score on Madame Web.
I gave Madame Web 1 out of 5 stars. Unfortunately, I didn't have a bad time watching this movie, but it's one of those things where you can have fun with it. Is it so bad it's good? I don't really know what that means anymore.
Yeah.
But I honestly wouldn't say don't see it.
I as well. Especially if you want to just be connected to the popular culture and get all the references.
Her web is connecting us all. But it is interesting, like, you know, we live in this echo chamber of everyone like joking about it, and yet it's making no money. It kind of seems like, oh, everyone's gonna see it anyways just because it's like the meme, but they're not.
No, they're not. That is a really funny thing to say, because we do live in this echo chamber, and it's hard for me sometimes to step out of our bubble and realize no one's watching this movie. And it's very possible, because of the amount of negativity surrounding its release. Someone commented on my TikTok video saying, Madame Web, #1 movie on Netflix in 3 weeks.
And yes.
I could 1000% see that happening. Madame Web hitting Netflix, everybody finally getting a chance to watch it. And it comes back like trending because people are finally watching it again. That is the pipeline we live in.
Classic incoming.
I know. So
what did you give it?
I gave it a 1.5. Okay. I, like you, was like, it's not very good, but I won't deny I had a blast watching it. I was at the premiere, the world premiere. Madame
I cannot believe people were acting like that at the premiere.
It was wild. And I said this on Patreon, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but usually at these premieres, people show up, they do the red carpet, they go to the movie. If the movie is not good, or rumor is the movie is not good, people will do the red carpet and just leave, not go to the movie.
Right.
A lot of people did that. Let's just say that.
I think Dakota Johnson did that.
I think the whole cast did that. I don't think anybody stayed to watch that movie. So who knows? Who knows what happened? That theater was having a good time laughing. So
I wish I'd been there.
Anyways, well, that is the end of our episode on Madame Web. If you like the movie, let us know. You can rate, review, leave some questions on Spotify. Mm-hmm. Next week's episode, God, February has been so slow. But next week, I think we're talking Driveway Dolls before we talk about the event of the year. Dune Part 2 releases March 1st. We will be talking about it. I think I'm seeing it, Sydney. I'm seeing it on February 21st.
Yep.
I'm so sorry about that.
Yeah, I've gone through the stages of grief. It's fine. Okay. Joe's going to see it. And, you know, I could have gone to Joe's screening if I lived in L.A.
If you lived in L.A., you would have been there. But I'm seeing it February 21st. And then I'm seeing it February 25th?
Yeah.
No, 25th. That's the
day
of
that's when
like,
the early screenings are, the AMC early screenings.
And then I'm seeing it again on the 26th.
What? How are you seeing it the 26th?
I know another screening. I know of someone else who's hosting a screening. I'll be there. By time March 1st rolls around, I would have seen Dune Part 2 three separate times.
Wow.
I am going to be so ready for this conversation. It's going to be a blast.
I can't wait. I've got three tickets booked.
Well, we'll get maybe we get our episode out on the day? No. I don't know.
I mean, I think it would be good because everyone's going to be seeing it.
So it's true. It's going to be a popular movie.
Dune, what are you doing?
What are you doing if you're not seeing Dune Part 2?
Is Dune Part 2 the event of the year?
Oh, gosh. I think it is.
I think it is.
I mean, what other movie competes with it in terms of scale?
Furiosa, maybe?
I don't even think Deadpool. Furiosa. I think Furiosa is going to be very appealing to a very niche audience. I think Deadpool will be very appealing. Probably the only other movie that is going to be remotely
in
scale.
I don't even think it's going to come close. I think originally it was like, is Dune the new Star Wars? Dune is the new Lord of the Rings.
I'm glad you're saying that. I agree with you.
I just can't believe we're living through it.
My question to you, does Dune Part 2 make $1 billion?
Huh. How much did Part 1 make?
Part 1 made like 600-ish. But it's important to remember, Dune Part 1 came out like towards the tail end of the pandemic.
Wait, it made 600 mil?
No, I'm so sorry. 433.8.
Oh, okay. And it made 30 mil just from the re-release screenings.
So
I think
a lot of money.
Part 2 makes $1 billion.
Are you locking it in right now?
Yeah, lock me in.
Okay.
Do you think so?
No. I say Dune Part 2 brings in $810 million.
It's going to get the Oppenheimer curse.
Maybe the Oppenheimer curse. I just think that as popular as Dune is, it's still hard sci-fi. Like, it is a true sci-fi through and through, and that will not be appealing to some people.
Yeah, I think maybe there are enough Dune
I need. We need to get haters. Out of our bubble, our echo chamber here. People There's a lot different. Of people who don't love Dune 1. That sounds crazy, because
no,
Dune Part 1 is very good, but when that movie came out, the amount of people that were commenting on my videos saying Dune Part 1 sucked, flabbergasting.
Wow.
It got to
wow.
the point where I was comfortable saying Dune Part 1 is already underrated by the amount of people who are just like shitting on this movie.
I'm looking at it now and it only has a 74%. Oh, that's Metacritic, but still 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's too low, man.
I'm telling you, man.
But I mean, it's, you know, I think Part 2 will kind of complete this picture. I think Dune is really dense, and I will say there's a lot of stuff that Denis Villeneuve like just kind of mentioned and brushed past that I can imagine you're watching and you're like, what the hell is going on? That it wouldn't be super engaging for some people if you don't really care to put all the effort in. So we'll see.
I was at a resort in Mexico when I heard these boomers next to me in the pool say, I watched this movie in the hotel called Dune. Turn it off halfway through. It was so boring.
What do you mean this movie? They were there when the books came out.
I know. But wow. That is kind of the reality we live in. There is a healthy amount of people who just don't like the movie.
I do not blame people for thinking it's boring. I think I can say that.
Okay.
Honestly.
All right. Well, Dune Part 2 is happening very soon. We'll have an episode on that, of course.
Yes, we will.
Next week, Driveaway Dolls. And thankfully, March is kind of the signal. Better movies. We're getting a lot more movies.
Yeah, they're coming. I'm having weird lulls in the movie schedule where I'm like, man, I kind of want to be busy, but it seems we're not getting consistent, exciting releases.
January and February was a rough couple of months.
Yeah.
Not a lot of great movies, a lot of bad ones. March is usually like, all right, we're going to get a little more consistent now. We're kind of preparing for the summer season. We're not there just yet, but we're getting there. March will bring some bangers. I'm very excited about it.
And we're starting off strong with South by Southwest.
South by Southwest will be there. You'll watch Roadhouse.
Let's go. Yes, I will.
I'll be watching Monkey Man. You'll be watching Monkey Man. Oh, it's going to be a good couple days.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that is the end of this episode on Madam Web, the official end. Again, if you want to check out the Patreon, we've got exclusive episodes over there. And of course, rate and review over on Spotify and Apple. Sydney. Our Reb will keep us connected. I will talk to you very soon. Listeners, have a wonderful day, night, week, and weekend. And we'll see you guys next time.
Goodbye, listeners.